dying, Father, is nothing less of, since I was a child, I had the feeling that something is missing in me. I want to know why I am here. Can any of us know that?
Become yourself. Then God and the devil don't matter.
I want to learn. I want to understand. Be careful. Can you find the force to enable these two quite opposite lives to live together in yourself? At any moment, the wolf can devour the lamb.
And you must learn what it means to become responsible.
This is an exact life. And that is why you are here.
History to the unknown future. This is Red Ice Radio for the seeker.
Think and know it. I'm going to. I must strive to know.
Welcome to Red Ice Radio. This is Henrik. Thank you for tuning in. RedIceCreations.com is the website. Today we're talking with Joseph Farrell about hidden conflicts, breakaway civilization, and the ET threat. Joseph P. Farrell has a doctorate in patristics from the University of Oxford and pursues research in physics, alternative history, science, and other strange stuff. He's the author of many books in the field of alternative research, and in the first hour we're going to begin on the Boston Marathon bombings and what appears to be an internal Gladio operation with a huge geopolitical agenda behind it, which could be spun in a variety of ways. Hi, Joseph. It's good to talk to you again. Welcome back, by the way. How have you been doing since we last talked? Almost a year ago. Not quite, though.
Yeah, pretty good, Henrik. Thanks for having me back on.
You bet. A lot of things has been going on from Boston to the European crisis unfolding, and I believe you have new books in the works, of course, since we last talked. One of these is Covert Wars and Breakaway Civilizations. That's definitely one I want to, you know, ask you a little bit more about later. But I just thought we could tie in some bit of news here first. I guess
the
most recent thing, obviously, the most dramatic event is the Boston bombings, and I'd like to, I guess, get your take on how you interpret the message, as I see it in a way. This is a message. It's, to me, as I begin looking at this, Joseph, it's obviously planted people in place at the time. All of the evidence surrounding this, to me, points to the fact that someone really wants all of us who are investigating and who have access to a computer and the web and everything else to realize how much of a false flag this event is. It's more obvious than ever. What do you think, Joseph?
Oh, I totally agree. One of the things that when this happened two things that really popped out at me. And the first was that the reaction, almost as soon as I heard about it, Henrik, I posted a notice on Facebook, just kind of querying people on what their reaction to it was. And obviously that's not a scientific poll or anything like that, but overwhelmingly, most of the people had the immediate impression or reaction that this was theater, that this was a put-up job, that this was an inside job, that the U.S. government wasn't coming entirely clean with everything. And then, of course, we saw what, for all intents and purposes, was a virtual lockdown of an entire city to track down two alleged perpetrators of this crime. And, you know, I got to thinking about that, Henrik, and the first thing that popped into my mind is, what are we getting for this multi-billion, now into the trillions of dollars, war on terror, with all of the cameras, bomb-sniffing dogs, SWAT teams, and so on? Has it made any of us safer?
No.
And the overwhelming answer that people gave was no. And the other thing historically that I just found so incredible, you know, I've studied, as you know, I've studied the history of World War II, particularly in Europe, rather extensively. And to my mind, I cannot recall an instance where an entire city the size of Hamburg, Boston, or to give a European comparison, Hamburg or Frankfurt or someplace like that, was locked down by the Nazis to hunt down two people for committing, you know, a terrorist act. You know, the Nazis did lots of horrible things, exterminating villages and so on and so forth. But I can't recall ever hearing of this kind of scale of paranoia. And then the other thing that really disturbed me about it, Henrik, that has the footprints of something very foul, very malodorous, is the fact that on the same day, just as the Marathon bombing occurred, the bullion commodities trade in this country was just drawing to a close. And of course, as most people now are aware, the paper bullion just absolutely completely tumbled. To a certain extent, you might even say it collapsed, although that might be too strong of a word. But there was definitely an organized attempt, and I think that it probably comes ultimately out of the Federal Reserve, to drive down the price of paper gold. And of course, that immediately, that concurrent with the Boston Marathon bombing, raised all sorts of red flags to me, because as you know, Germany has been calling for a repatriation of its gold. There are a number of other countries that have joined Germany. Holland, I think, is one of them. Mm-hmm. Switzerland, more recently. And prior to that, of course, we had Venezuela and I think it was either Peru or Ecuador. So you had all of these countries kind of following Germany on this repatriate the gold bandwagon. And then all of a sudden we had the takedown in paper gold. So all of this appears to me to be orchestrated. And to top off all of this speculation, the things that drove my suspicion meters into the red zone, so to speak, was the fact that now we learned that apparently Russia's FSB warned the FBI about these Chechens for some time. So we already have right there an indicator that there was at least some degree of prior knowledge on the part of American authorities.
Yeah.
And on top of that, we have the problem that, you know, this has all the trappings to me of a kind of an internal Gladio operation. And the reason
right.
why I say that, you know, which ties into the Covert Wars Breakaway Civilizations book quite a bit, because I spent some time with all of that. The problem here is that, as everyone pretty much is well aware now in the alternative community, these drills are often used to piggyback a real operation. So in other words, this looks to me like yet another instance of where we had, you know, the 9/11 business with all the drills taking place on 9/11. There are even similar evidences that something like that was occurring in Oklahoma City during Oklahoma City bombing. So this looks very murky to me. It has the fingerprints, it has the feel, it has the odor, if I can use that word, of a Gladio style operation.
Well, you're right. I mean, it's eerily similar to the stay behind armies and the intentions, the strategy of tension
right.
that they wanted to create in Europe at the time. I think the only thing in comparison, I guess, would be some of the terrorism that took place in Northern Ireland or something like that. I don't know, kind of entire cities.
Well, the other thing that that occurred to me is how similar, in some respects, that this was to what happened in Oslo with Anders Breivik.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, again, there was a drill there. There was a bomb. You know, all of the same footprints were there. And what disturbs me, Henrik, is if this should prove to be more than just a wild speculation or a wild guess, if more information coming out should indicate that it has all the footprints of a Gladio-style operation, then that's very disturbing. Because what it means is that NATO stay-behind army strategy of tension is now being brought to North America and being practiced here.
Yeah.
You know, it's bad enough that this was done to the cost of hundreds of innocent lives, if I'm not mistaken, in Europe. you know, beginning with Aldo Moro and going right down through Bader-Meinhof and all of that.
Yeah.
This is very disturbing to me. And you know, just on the face of it, Henrik, I don't think that you can say that the Boston Marathon bombing occurring on the very day that there was an organized takedown of gold and silver bullion paper is coincidental. That just stretches my my belief too far.
Yeah. They must have had, I don't know how many patsies, but a number of them beyond the Tsarnaev brothers. Even to the people that were standing there with the same outfit and garb as the you know, the organization or company similar to Blackwater, the private,
yes,
mercenary company, the Kraft. I mean, come on, the Kraft,
right,
with the Punisher logo on the
with the Punisher logo. Yeah, it's very obvious. And then the martial law lockdown. To me, it's another one of these little theater things that. Fortunately, you know, if there's a good side to this, and there's very little good side to it, but if there is a good side to it, the interesting thing to me is the reaction that I see taking place not only on the internet, but if you've been following the talk radio hosts, which after the bombing I actually cranked up enough of my willpower to manage to listen to them for a couple of days before,
mm-hmm,
I got sick of it, but.
Mm-hmm.
Even there, you heard callers calling in and voicing their outrage, not so much that this happened, but their outrage at already what they perceived to be the spin that was being put out by the major networks and some of these talk show hosts. So that was at least one positive sign to the whole thing.
Let me do a spin on that, Joseph, and just ask.
Sure.
Let me ask you this, because I agree with you. I mean, definitely. What I see that this is a multi-tiered or multi-leveled agenda also that's going on at the same time. And I mean, I don't,
absolutely,
mean to take this too far, but nonetheless, what I see is that this is indicative of someone who are behind these kinds of events also want to use this to play this, to polarize the people, to have an idea,
yes,
that there is a strong grassroots alternative movement that are doing everything they can to push against the obvious fakeness of the mainstream movement that are just, you know,
right,
completely behind whatever the government or the FBI is saying. And what I'm just want to, you know, extend here to listeners listening to this is like, what the long-term plan is, what do they have in the works for how this is going to be used when everyone down the road are going to eventually see through that this is how FBI handles the situation. This is how the government runs things. Even the New York Times had his editorial posted from last year, I believe, basically openly talking about the sting operations that the FBI is doing and the entrapments and everything else. Not flat out talking about false flag attacks, but definitely alluding to it. So this is going,
right,
to be the common knowledge down the road, Joseph. This is what I see. So how will it be used, do you think?
Well, that's another good question. There was the attempt by the Obama administration initially, and I think, and let me take that back, not so much by the administration, but by people who lionize it. Let's put it that way. That would be more accurate.
Yeah.
Within what we would call the left wing or liberal media in this country, there was almost a kind of wish, a hope, that this was some act of domestic terrorism from the right wing.
Exactly, yeah.
You know, and what disturbed me there was that we heard this from the Clinton administration and people in the media during the Oklahoma City bombing. You know, there was this vast right-wing conspiracy, to quote the phrase that was used at that time, to demonize people on the political right, and there are. I mean, there's no doubt there's a radical right wing in this country that's just utterly on the lunatic fringe. But I suspect, in all honesty, Henrik, that my suspicion lies somewhere very else, and that's with Russia and with the Middle East. And the reason why I suspect that this might be part of a long-term agenda here is, as everyone knows, the Western powers have been itching for one excuse after another to go in and directly intervene in Syria and use that as a doorway or a launching pad, so to speak, to take care of Iran. And what's been standing in the way, quite frankly, is Russia. And there is behind this an even longer-term agenda that was more or less announced by Zbigniew Brzezinski in a number of his books and articles, and it's been certainly apparent since the collapse of the Soviet Union, and that's this drive to peel away the Soviet republics and put in Western puppet governments and basically encircle Russia. This has been the agenda since the collapse of the Soviet Union. And I suspect that with this Chechen connection, particularly with Russia attempting to warn us of these characters, that there may be an attempt to spin this or play this into a wider geopolitical agenda. That's what concerns me ultimately behind this gold and silver takedown, because we've also seen moves on the world stage that there's this alignment now, the BRICS nations, Brazil, Russia, India, China, and more recently South Africa, that have been moving away from the dollar as their reserve currency. And I strongly suspect that this is a drive that is being spearheaded very quietly behind the scenes, not so much by Beijing, but by Moscow. So, you know, I suspect that this Boston Marathon bombing may, I'm not saying will, but just very definitely may be used in a variety of subtle ways to spin this geopolitical agenda.
Well, definitely. I mean, of course, whoever is actually behind this, whatever the level of interaction this we have with so-called true terrorists as opposed to phonies and everything else. I mean, it's obvious that it's phonies at this point, but nonetheless, sure. Joseph, they will use it to their advantage. I just wanted to ask quickly about one of the main kind of workers, if you will, in terms of destabilizing the Russian satellite states, Boris Berezovsky, and he died here in April.
Yeah.
Very interesting character, very strange death, actually. I mean, he was going to head off to Israel, I think, for holiday just before he died, and it's been a long struggle with Putin in this case. Do you think that someone took him out, and this is like an extension to the ongoing Cold War, if you will?
I think you can entertain the reasonable suspicion that someone took him out, because he represented that class of post-Soviet oligarchs, you know, basically communist bosses turned mafia dons, if you want to look at it a certain way. And Putin, you know, I've been maintaining, and people just don't understand this in the West, but I've been maintaining for years and years that Putin comes out of that element within the KGB that, if you turn back the clock and look back to 1936, there was a deal struck between Joseph Stalin and the then locum tenens of the Moscow Patriarchate, a fellow by the name of Metropolitan Sergei Strogorodsky. And the deal was basically Stalin took a page from Peter the Great's playbook and decided to recruit the church, basically, to do nothing but domestic spying. And his view was, of course, this would strengthen the regime's hand against a probable future Nazi invasion, which, of course, he proved to be correct about. But, you know, the other part is that Stalin was a former seminarian and knew very well how deeply entwined the Orthodox religion is in Russian culture. So I think, you know, looking at it that way, I think basically what you had is an agreement there that ultimately set up a whole division of the KGB to do nothing but watch the church. But what that meant was that the church ended up with a great deal of influence inside the KGB. And I think Putin, given the fact that he is a practicing Russian Orthodox believer and the fact that he is such a nationalist and surrounds himself, this is what I find very peculiar, that he surrounds himself with the trappings of pre-Soviet Romanov Russia. The Romanov eagle and so on and so forth. This is a present, ever-present theme in his regime. So I think really he's not so much a neo-Stalinist as he is a kind of neo-nationalist Slavophile or czarist, whatever you want to call it.
Yeah, yeah.
He and his people have been waging this very quiet covert war of their own against the covert war that took place after the fall of the Soviet Union, with the oligarchs assuming such massive control and trying to sell off Russian assets to Western interests. Putin's put a check to that and I think is attempting to roll that back. So I think in geopolitical terms, when Russia is warning us about Chechen terrorists and then the FBI lets it proceed on top of the gold and silver takedown, yeah, I think there's a huge geopolitical agenda that is behind the Boston Marathon bombing, and time will tell, you know, if I'm right or if I'm wrong about that. But I think it's going to be spun in coming weeks and months in a very interesting way.
Well, indeed. Oh boy, I mean, there's so many different layers on this. obviously, Joseph, Putin's activities are some that obviously clashes with the aspirations of a world government. As you say, he's more nationalist inclined, and this is something that completely, he's not playing ball basically at this stage. That's why it's continuously demonized in the Western media, etc. But this interesting quirk here that the FSB is warning basically the FBI, but they are, so that means that the FSB or Russians are trying to play ball in a sense here, but this offer of help, if you will, is denied by the U.S. authorities because they want to potentially use this to pin this on the Russians, correct?
Right. Yeah. That's kind of what I'm thinking. There's too many aspects of this, Henrik, that bother me, and that's one of them. The other is that occurred shortly after the bombing happened. I think this was within 2 or 3 days, if I'm not mistaken. There was a notice, and I even blogged about this, that all of a sudden the Israelis were sending help, you know, professional help. And I got to thinking about that. Well, why the Israelis? What's so special that they know about terrorism that nobody else does? After all, you know, the Russians have bomb-sniffing dogs and experience with terrorists, too. Certainly the Germans have bomb-sniffing dogs and certainly have experience with terrorists. Although, you know, if we were to ask for their help, they'd probably say, give us our gold first, you know. But the offer of help here is peculiar. And like you say, the fact that it wasn't followed through, that this was allowed to proceed, and now, in addition to all of this, Henrik, I'm seeing stories appear on the internet. I don't know how true they are yet, but I'm seeing stories appear that this family had some connection to the CIA at some point. Yep. So, you know, the rumors are going, and this is another sure sign to me that we're dealing with an operation of some sort, because even if the rumors are not true, someone is planting them, and that means you have, therefore, a deliberate attempt to obfuscate the story. And whenever that happens, I think you've got a clear signature that this is an inside job. I mean, just look at, you know, going all the way back to the Kennedy assassination, which for me is the bellwether event in modern American history. And the reason why is everybody knows it was a conspiracy. Even at the time, people thought it was a conspiracy. I remember because I was a little boy at the time, and the official story that was put out was so ridiculous, but it was basically rammed down everybody's throat, and the social engineering result was we got away with murder, we sold you a silly explanation, and we can do it again. And this has been the playbook ever since. So, yeah, we're watching the story being obfuscated. The Russian role here is very peculiar. They were trying to warn us. And again, like you point out, this comes from the FSB. This is Vladimir Putin's stomping ground. So, in other words, this, in my opinion, the warning had to have probably come from a very high level. And he himself was probably made aware of it. So, this has a geopolitical odor to it that I just can't put aside and get away from. And I think, you know, watch the spin that's put to it, to this angle, the Chechnyan angle, in the coming weeks and months, because that may tell us a whole lot right there.
Yeah, yeah. We have his father speaking out, believing that his sons have been framed pretty much, and that there is this connection to the FBI Secret Service. I basically wanted to bring it to your attention as well, Joseph, that the Tsarnaev family received over $100,000 in benefits. This is an article that came out from the Boston Herald. Did you catch this one?
No, I didn't. What's this about?
It was basically that in taxpayer funded assistance, they received, as the article says, a bonanza ranging from cash and food stamps to Section 8 housing from 2002 to 2012. Basically, the Boston Herald. I don't know if it's indicative of something, but it is definitely indicative of that this is a family that potentially is brought into the United States to be here, to act as a potential future usage of some kind. Do you see what I'm getting at?
Yes, yes. I can easily see that being the case, especially if this is, as I've speculated, some sort of manifestation of a Gladio-style operation. I can easily see that being the case. I've had the suspicion or the speculation for some time that this might be the covert agenda behind this country's so-called immigration problems, that there may be a covert agenda at work, and that covert agenda may have something to do with domestic terrorism. And the thing that, you know, that is always the case, I mean, we can go all the way back to Venice, you know, the Venetian Republic, and remember that behind terrorism there is always an organized state that is behind it at some point. The anarchist terrorist is someone that's used by deeper, murkier players that usually have some sort of state agenda in mind. So, you know, I have no difficulty entertaining that type of speculation, Henrik, especially given what we've already seen, the suspicious things concerning this incident.
Indeed. Now, what if we could zoom over a little bit to the Eurozone, and then we can see if we can tie this in. I know that you did in one of your last commentaries, and it has to do with currency and everything else. But if we go over to Germany, we have these the five wise men of Merkel, the gnomes that are basically pushing for the same wealth seizure that we saw proposed in Cyprus here, and it's sanctioned theft, robbery, government sanctioned theft. They want to punish people who have a little bit of money, take it from the rich, and then to feed the whole of, if you will, of the government. What do you make of this?
Well, I think it's true. Germany puzzles me, to be quite honest, Henrik, because if you look at some of their actions in the last few years, particularly with this business of the theft, quite literally, of savings in Cyprus, Germany appears on the one hand to be the compliant lapdog of the IMF, the World Bank, and basically of the City of London and Wall Street. But then you flip the coin and you see very different behavior from Germany. The calling back of their gold, in fact, their insistence upon it, and that over initial opposition from the Bundesbank and some of the other major banks in Germany. And then you see Merkel with her entire federal cabinet flying off to Beijing, you know, which I still find to be one of the more unusual political events that wasn't covered at all in this country.
Yeah, but, I didn't, you know, catch that.
Yeah, well, you know, when you take virtually the entire cabinet with you, that's kind of, you know, that's something. And it's certainly newsworthy. And then you have Germany making all of these energy deals with Russia, and then the recent announcement by Russia that, you know, everything's fine in the Eurozone. It's as if Russia is saying, oh, you know, go Merkel. So I find Germany's actions to be at best ambiguous. And
Okay, good. Yeah, I just called you on the cell phone, obviously, and as you said, we don't know if it's acts of God or acts of Fort Meade, or what do you say? That's targeting us here, but we do have a plenty of cutouts at the moment, so I do hope we can proceed. I don't even know where we left off, Joseph.
Well, I think we were kind of wrapping up the idea that there could be a covert agenda behind this country's immigration policies, or lack thereof, because it certainly seems that when you have a porous border, that all sorts of people can come in, and you know, we've certainly seen one result of that, as you mentioned, with the Boston Herald article. So, sad to say, I think it's all at least tending to the direction of at least kind of corroborating the speculation that we might be dealing with a kind of Operation Gladio style strategy of tension type operation over here.
Let me ask you again, and I hope you can hear me now, that the where some of this money is going. You've detailed a little bit about how basically trillions of US dollars worth of gold-backed US Federal Reserve bonds and all that, it keeps popping up in Europe, and at the same time we have the European population being robbed by the European Union, pretty much. And so Where does the money go, Joseph? Who's getting all this money?
Oh, boy. That's a huge story. And it's really one of the kind of the central speculation of covert wars and breakaway civilizations. Because, and if I can paint a bit of background here.
Sure, go ahead.
My real goal in these little series of books is to deal with Richard Dolan's hypothesis of a breakaway civilization. And what I'm attempting to do is to kind of reverse engineer the culture and mentality of a group of people that might be tempted to set up something like that, and the reasons why they're doing it. Well, you know, right up front, I have to say I'm in agreement with Mr. Dolan that the reasons for doing so, the hidden reason ultimately of all of this, is the UFO. This is kind of the hidden motivating factor of most national security policy history in the last 50 years. And if you stop and consider then what this means, the UFO's performance characteristics are certainly at least beyond, at the time that they began to appear during World War II, beyond human performance capability. And this would have been perceived as a national security threat, a long-term national security threat. And there would have been an effort to understand the phenomenon, and more importantly, an effort to achieve some level of technological emulation of it. And once we say those words, we've said we need a lot of money.
Right.
And, you know, once you say that, then we start looking at some of the motivations for the dirty financial deals that were done largely by this country at the end of World War II and immediately thereafter. It's always been my thesis, my hypothesis, that we made some of those dirty deals with the post-war Nazis simply to get a hold of their loot and launder that money. And I've entertained the suspicion that the Bilderberg meetings initially were for the purposes of coordinating all of that financial action. What is not well known is that there was an even deeper, murkier story that was being done with Japan. And what people have to understand is that when the Japanese went into Asia during World War II, they literally vacuumed every last little piece of wealth out of Asia that they could. In this respect, they were far more efficient than the Germans were. And the pile of loot, particularly of bullion, of gold and silver bullion, has never really adequately been accounted for, but this, I believe, is the source of the obfuscated figures of the amounts of gold actually in existence. I think it may be greater than we're told by an order of magnitude, if not more. Now, the interesting thing, Henrik, is that when General MacArthur learned of the existence of this vast pile of loot, he had an American captain, a fellow by the name of Ed Lansdale, who becomes, if you're familiar with that name, he becomes one of the key covert operatives in the CIA during the period from the end of World War II all the way up through the Kennedy assassination. This is the guy that, if you've seen Oliver North's film JFK, this is the guy that orders Mr. X to Antarctica, okay? If you look at Stone's film, he gives you a hint that Lansdale's is the man that he's talking about by showing you a portion of his nameplate on the desk, okay? But Ed Lansdale was tasked by General MacArthur to fly to Washington, D.C. and brief President Truman himself on the existence of this vast amount of hard cash that could be used to bankroll covert operations. And it's very interesting, it's very illustrative, I think, to know that President Truman decided to keep all of that top secret and entirely off the books. In other words, this was not reported to Congress. This wasn't reported to anyone. It was solely and purely kept within the military industrial intelligence complex. So what you had is immediately a creation of a hidden system of finance, completely hidden. And it's a political covert operations slush fund. Now here's the problem. When I began looking at these European bearer bond scandals, I had to ask myself one question. When you counterfeit something, do you counterfeit a $7 bill?
No.
And the answer is no. You don't counterfeit something that doesn't exist or that you know that people suspect exists.
Yeah.
So to be counterfeiting billions of dollars of Federal Reserve, now this is another key point, of Federal Reserve bearer bonds that are allegedly backed by gold, you've created an immense paper market in gold. If this is sounding familiar, because we've just seen the takedown of the paper market in gold as the demand for the physical product keeps going up. So this is, I think, something that we have to tie the modern bearer bonds to. We've got to tie it to this hidden system of finance. And the fact that the Federal Reserve is doing this is another dead giveaway, because there is a case in modern Japanese history when Prime Minister Tanaka decided to issue bonds as payoffs of other bonds that were ready to come due. And when these bonds were issued, they were called 57 bonds. When these bonds were issued, they were printed with deliberate mistakes so that when the bearer of these bonds turned up to cash them in, depending on how well they played ball, they could either be cashed in at a discount or simply denounced as counterfeit. All right? Mm. With me?
Yep.
Now, in the case of the Federal Reserve bonds, again, we find them printed with little misprints, little errors of grammar, and the biggest whopper is, of course, the Federal Reserve doesn't issue bonds, the U.S. Treasury does. Okay?
Yeah.
So in other words, we've set up a huge system of fake bonds to suction out more liquid cash with all of this Japanese gold backing it all up. So in other words, we've leveraged a huge system of finance that is entirely off the books. Now, the problem here is that some of this certainly went to fund covert operations like the Gladio operations that we've been talking about. But the amount that is in existence in just these bearer bond scandals themselves that have come to light is about $6 trillion. So that suggests that this huge system of finance was for something else that greatly exceeded the financial requirements of covert operations. And the only thing that I can think of, Henrik, that would be requiring such a staggering amount of money would be precisely something like a program to emulate technologically, the performance characteristics of UFOs. So that's kind of where I was going in that book with that whole story. And I want to make one final comment. I've had a bunch of people write me and tell me, well, the system that you're describing will never work. It's fraudulent. Ultimately, it'll collapse. And I'm not saying that this system will work. I'm simply describing what they did and what I suspect the connections are to what's going on now. Yeah. I'm not saying that it'll work because clearly this has not been a very good system for the West. And since we've mentioned the fraudulent basis of this system, I think that it is precisely this system that is being gradually and slowly exposed precisely by the BRICS nations. And the reason why I think there's a connection between all of this and what's going on now is that many of these Federal Reserve gold-backed bonds were allegedly given to the nationalist Chinese prior to World War II when they sent their gold to this country for safekeeping. All right? So in other words, China has a huge stake in this, and if anybody knows about the existence of a vast hidden system of finance based on stolen gold, it would be the Chinese. This is a huge story that spins off in a lot of different and wild places. But the sheer amount of money that we're looking at here, I think, indicates, this may have gone to set up covert operations like Gladio and terrorism and things of that sort. But you don't need trillions or even billions of dollars for that. You know, a couple of $10 million here and $10 million there is pocket change. And, you know, it is more than adequate to set up terrorist operations. So the amount of money suggests to me a huge research project that they had to find a way to finance and fund and keep it so completely hidden that the research itself would never be exposed.
And then on top of this potential monitor system, you have maybe even a maintenance perhaps of sort, or maybe this is we could be talking about multiple different groups. We have, you know, there are multiple different agendas going on at the same time. But I mean, on top of this, you have the black market of illegal arm trades, all the drugs, sex rings, all the filth in the world that's going on. But does any of this have the origin in Yamashita's gold of Japan?
Oh yes, absolutely. I think Yamashita's gold is the basis of this, because again, like I said, the amount that the Japanese plundered from Asia, and it's very important that people step back and remember something. The gold that existed in Asia, in the temples and so on and so forth, as best as I can determine, was never officially calculated in the amounts of gold that was traded as a commodity. So in other words, we are looking at obfuscated figures of gold in existence in the world. This is something else I pointed out in that book. At some length, you know, you get one set of figures from the Bank of England, you get another set, completely different set of figures from the Vatican Bank, and so on and so forth. And oddly enough, I mentioned the Vatican Bank. Well, Emperor Hirohito, as the war was drawing to a close, guess where he stashed his money?
In the Vatican. The Vatican Bank?
In the Vatican. Wow. Yeah, in the Vatican Bank. Yeah, wow.
Oh, my.
So, you know, if anybody knows how much gold there really is, it's probably the best guess is going to come out of the Vatican. But, you know, yeah, does Yamashita's gold have to do with all of this? Oh, yes, you betcha it does.
Yeah, yeah. Well, it's interesting. So much goes back to this, and also the general overall geopolitical, well, reformation or revolution, if you will, that occurred with the aid of the Second World War. Because after this point, everything changes on so many different levels. Even allegiances change. You don't know who's working for what or who or what agenda anymore. And and also on top of that, I guess I wanted to get a little bit to, you know, how far ahead they are in the potential development of their technology that they please. Because just because you have money, Joseph, doesn't guarantee success, of course.
Right. My guess, you know, I get into a bit of the technology, what I call technologies of emulation in the Covert Wars Breakaway Civilizations book. I'm doing much more on that on that score in the book I'm writing now. But to summarize it in a nutshell, is my guess is that there is probably at least a technology that is capable of playing blind man's bluff or playing bluffing a hand of poker with whoever it is that's behind the UFO. I think it's got to that point. The reason I say that is it's very interesting. If you go back and look at Colonel Corso's Day After Roswell book, he says something that to me has such significance, and it has been so overlooked or in some cases made fun of. But his point is, in that book that he makes over and over, especially toward the end of it, is that the national security state at the end of World War II is really confronted by two realities. The first reality is the Soviet Communist bloc. The second reality is the UFO. And, you know, in my take, some of that technology represents offspring or developments of Nazi technology, but not all of it. Some of it represents somebody else's. So the national security state is literally, in his words, fighting a two-front war. And I think in that regard, then, you begin to look and question some of the developments that have taken place since the Cold War. One of the things I think that's an indicator, Henrik, that we are looking at some very advanced technologies is the suddenness now with which both the United States and the Soviet Union, or pardon me, the Russian Federation, have been dismantling at breakneck speed their strategic nuclear arsenal. We're down to about a tenth of what our arsenals were during the Cold War, during the height of the Cold War. Hmm. Now, that's not to say that they're not modernizing their nuclear weapons arsenals. Both parties are. But what's interesting to me is there's less talk of strategic nuclear weapons. I think this has moved into a whole new ball game. We have emulational weapons based on weather modification, earthquakes, and so on and so forth. And I think ultimately these are coming out of that part of that breakaway civilization that has been tasked to deal with the UFO phenomenon insofar as the extraterrestrial long-term potential threat. That's my genuine opinion. And I'm hoping, I'm hoping in this coming book to argue the case that if you look at statements of people within that research and development branch of the military-industrial complex, and then compare them with the known physics research that some of these experimenters published publicly, and extrapolate between the statements and claims for the technologies being made and these experiments, I think all the indicators are, yes, some party of humanity has their hands on some very, very advanced, sophisticated technology.
Well, I want to ask you more about this. I want to elaborate on some of the points. Sure. and see where you're going next in the book here in the next segment. Joseph, I think we should take a break here. Our line seems to be holding at the moment, though, sure. So that's good news. Yeah. But Covert Wars and Breakaway Civilizations, that's your latest one. And, of course, you're working already on a follow-up to that, Covert Wars and Clash of Civilizations. So lots to do there, of course. And this is a continuation, I believe you said, on which one of your first books again?
Well, Saucer, Swastikas, and Psyops was the first little book in this little mini-series. It was kind of a bridge book between the Nazi books and then this idea of Mr. Dolan's that just captivates me, this breakaway civilization idea of his. So, yeah, it's Saucer, Swastikas, and Psyops that begins this little arc of books.
That's right, and it's carrying on here. It's very interesting, and of course, there's a lot of really, really interesting ideas presented both by Dolan, and then you pick this up and go further with it. And I want to, you know, go further with this idea as well in a second, but give us the website, Joseph, so people know where to go to pick up copies of the books and follow you. You have a member section and everything else, so give us the details.
Right. The website is www.GizaDeathStar.com. That's all one word, all lowercase, and there is a little web store right there on the website that they can get my books right there.
Very good. Do check it out. Check out the membership section that Joseph has there as well if you want to follow him on a more regular basis. We'll take a short break here and we'll return with more in a little bit.